in the kitchen of intrigue. Kurt Jackson and Chris Kellel are cooking up a batch of mystery soup.
Each episode serves a new blend of tips, tactics, trends, and tales from the business and design sides of the escape room world.
So grab your spoon, because this episode starts in 3, 2, 1.
Mystery Soup.
All right, welcome back to Mystery Soup. Thanks for joining us. I'm Kurt, and with me, as always, is Chris. I was going to come up with some kind of adjective, but it just didn't come to me.
Ever amazing. Always incredible. There's so many options. You could can't really narrow it down.
That's what it was. I couldn't do it. So in this episode, we're so excited to have Will and Kim from Escape Artist Greenville. Welcome, you two.
Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
Thanks for taking the time to do this. Chris has not been to play any of your games, but I have, and had a great time, and we'll get into that. I'm going to give you a chance to introduce yourselves, so take it away.
All right. My name is Will. I've been into like theme parks, immersive experiences, all sorts of stuff my whole life. My favorite thing to do is to go down to Orlando or Dollywood or Six Flags over Georgia or whatever, and nice. I could have, as a kid, spent all day long at those parks, and loved that stuff my whole life. At age 14, I got into home haunting, where I was creating my own experiences in our garage, and been pretty much doing that my whole life. I'm saying our, because when I met Kim, I dragged her into that hobby as well. We met in Clemson, and okay. Kim, you can do your introduction.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm Kim. I grew up in a town that loved Halloween. We had a huge street party every year, so that was always my favorite weekend of the year, and that's what got me into creating pretty elaborate costumes. So when I met Will, his love for haunted houses and then my love for costume design and creation kind of went together well. And it was one of our first sort of bonding things that I think led to the point where we got to escape rooms eventually.
How'd you all meet? Oh, you said at Clemson.
We met at Clemson. I met the first day I arrived at Clemson campus. I went to a pool party and met my future wife.
Look at there at a pool party.
I recruited him to be on our floaty race team, and we lost the race. So I yelled at him like, "You're so tall. How are you so bad at this?"
That's hilarious.
I thought it was a fun race for fun in the pool, but Kim took it pretty seriously.
Kim, are you pretty competitive?
I've heard that word before, yeah.
That's always the case, right? At least one person is competitive and one is there for the fun.
We're from the summer camp industry, and Clemson has a good recreation program. Gwen Powell is very involved with camping, so shout out to her. But yeah, and then I grew up in Southern California, so we had Disney annual passes, went all the time. Fortunately, we didn't have to drive too far to get to some of these places, but I understand that you, Will, worked at Universal Studios for a minute?
Yeah, I did for a minute. Now, I had an internship there for a summer in 2005 and then worked at Europa Park in Germany in 2006 for a summer with a company called Mack Rides, who designs roller coasters. Most of the coasters in that park were built by them, at least at the time. They've branched out a little bit, but
nice. Nice.
That was always the goal, to like work for a theme park, something along those lines, and then graduated with my master's in engineering in 2008, and nobody was hiring in that area, so got a quote unquote normal job being in a normal engineering. Yeah, exactly.
I grew up in Southern Illinois, so we had an annual pass to the local Walmart.
Oh, congrats.
Pretty much all we got to do growing up. So one of your locations is in an old office building. How ideal do you think it is having all those offices for escape rooms?
I think that early on when we were opening our business, that was incredibly important because we had no money. We didn't really have the building skills that we have today. So to have walls already built in, we were able to work within the constraints of those walls and almost use that as parameters for what we created. But it also limits what you can create. So, and it was better for our budget, but probably now we would never want to go into a building like that because it's a little too constraining.
Really? Interesting, because we're looking right now at office building versus retail, where the retail space is empty, right? The office space does have the walls, and same with us. We don't have that construction skill set, but it really, okay, I can see what we could do here and with this room, these two rooms, that type of thing. When we first went to your location, Tina and I looked at it and I was like, oh, this is perfect. How cool to have office building. And you could do so much. But it's interesting to that you say that. I could see how it would limit some of that creativity.
I wouldn't say it in a negative way, though. It really helped out a lot. And we wouldn't have been able to build our business without it. There's just no way we would have been able to start with a blank slate. We just did not have the income at the beginning, the capital. So there's a lot of good things to it. Who knows what we would do if we ever started a third building? I don't even want to talk about that. So I don't say I wouldn't look at another office building, but the big thing as well, of course, there's some other things, sprinklers, office buildings aren't always sprinkled. And there's some new rules that have been passed and a few things like that could make it more challenging in 2024 to open up in an office building.
What would you say is an ideal building? What do you look for now that you've been through it?
Number one is we are now spoiled by the height that we have in our second location. And it would be hard to go back to 8-foot ceilings. Some office buildings have 10-foot ceilings. Then I would say, yeah, okay, we could work within that. But we would 8-foot ceilings, just that is actually very limiting as well.
That's the biggest bummer for sure.
Mm-hmm. I would say the ideal situation would be somewhere between the two, where it's not just a huge wide open space, because then you have to build out every single little detail. But something that maybe has, we've seen some buildings that have some offices built into it, but then it almost has a little bit of a warehouse space as well. Mm-hmm. So you can work within the constraints of the rooms that are already established, but then you almost have this expansion space that you can let your imagination go wild.
Yeah. And so the second space you have, your second location, is it more what you wanted? With the higher ceiling?
It is. Oh, yeah. 14 to 16 foot ceilings, complete wide open space when we got in there. So we built everything. We built everything to spec, essentially. And that was a lot more expensive, but it was a fun way to do it a completely different way. And we got to do some things that we couldn't do in our current office building space.
Yeah, we played Help Wanted. Mm-hmm. And it's a little trendy area there, right? If I remember right.
Yeah. There's restaurants and breweries and stuff all around, like right next door. So it's a cool area. We're really excited to go in it. And we were really excited about the possibility to build out. Of course, the con was the actual build out cost and time. And just one of the most stressful things you can do, I think, in the escape room industry is that building construction process. It just takes so long for everybody. I don't know anyone it's gone perfectly well for. It's very stressful. You don't really have any say in it once you've hired the contractor and let them do their thing. They quoted us 6 to 8 weeks and it took 8 months. So that's kind of the feeling of it.
I wish we had gotten a contractor that came highly recommended. We picked this person not based off of recommendation. And that would be my biggest thing is take 3 times longer than you think it should take to find the right contractor.
Wow.
So that they actually do it. Yeah.
We did not have many options at the time though.
Yeah.
It was a big construction time. It was that 2021 big, like after COVID sort of construction boom. And we took the best thing we could find. And he had plenty of other jobs and we weren't super important to him.
That's crazy.
It's also a time you're just bleeding money into the business and
absolutely
can't really open to make money either, which is a pain.
Did you wait to open all of them at the same time or like one? Let's go.
We started with one as soon as we could help. One, it was the first one because it was the most modular, so we could get that open the quickest. And we opened that about, a month or two after the construction was done?
Yeah, we had been building it in our garage during the 6 months that they went over their deadline. So when we got access to the space, we were able to maybe get 60% of it in there. Mm-hmm. And then we had about 40% that we still had to build out, which still felt like it took forever, even though it was only maybe 4 to 6 weeks.
And so that location being like near restaurants and everything else, how much better is that for business than say the office building location?
I don't think that it actually plays as huge of a part as you would think, because on a map, the office building looks better because it's closer to downtown. So We do a very large percentage of regional tourism. And I think that just looking at the map, people may say, oh, that's near downtown. Okay. But I think that once people get there and play one game at Hampton Station, where we have more of the other fun stuff right there, then they get it. But I don't know, maybe Will will disagree, but I think it's a little less impactful than we thought it would be.
I would agree with that. And escape rooms are things that people go to. It's not a usual, unless you're like the escape game giant, big front facade with public booking, then having a walk-in sort of thing is great. But the amount of walk-ins we're able to accommodate is fairly low because they have to show up at the right time and be ready to pay and be the right size group. And Sundays we can get a good amount of walk-ins, but Saturdays we're usually booked out in advance. We still get the people that come to that facility, see the escape artist name, later go look us up on the website. That's all good stuff. True. So it's hard to put a dollar amount on that. But from our perspective marketing, we're like, hey, we're not banking on that. We're going to do all of our own marketing, pull people in, and we'll take the rest of the stuff as kind of bonus.
Sure. That's
awesome. I was looking on the website. You guys have a huge variety of games. I was counting nine-ish. If you count the elevator or the lift, the smaller one, that's incredible. You got everything from scary to fun. Was that kind of your plan when you started out to have that wide variety?
When we first started, we had the background in home haunting and we were inspired to build something scary, but we had this very strong feeling that to start with scary was maybe not the best business plan because there were no scary games at the time in 2016. Mm. Around here, at least, other places maybe. And so we said, we need to gain the trust of a customer base with a not scary game before we introduce our bigger passion, which was to scare the crap out of them. You know? And that was when we developed Dr. Fratelli's Cabin, which all of our games have, we can't help but startle you a few times in there because that's fun. But we
good to
then
know.
When,
good to know. Yeah, I'm not a scare. I don't do scary anything. So.
Yeah. Be warned. There are at least a few moments in all of our games where we surprise you with something, but it's not scary typically. And we developed a few games that were not scary before we did Starlight Motel. And I think that was good because we knew we could do scary, but we needed to really hone our skills in the puzzles, the running the business, everything that comes along with escape rooms that's different from haunted houses. So that I think that was our evolution in diversifying the types of games. And now I think we are just as excited about the non-scary games as we are the scary. Still think our best games are our scary games, but we get as excited about those.
Yeah, just looking at the title, Dark Lullaby, obviously that one, the surprise is I get a nap in the middle, right? That's the it's a short
there might be a nap at the beginning. We put you to sleep. And you enter the nightmare. It's part of the experience. Yeah. So yes. Awesome. You're not incorrect.
I feel like on the Facebook groups, it's your scary rooms that get mentioned the most, for sure. So take us through your design process.
Absolutely. That might be the easiest to do with our newest room because it's fresh in our minds, which is Castle Floofendorf. And so our facility in Hampton Station, they're all themed around dreams and they all have a storyline kind of flowing through. So in Help Wanted was our sci-fi room. You're working behind the scenes of the Dream Factory, Dark Lullaby Horror. You're entering into a nightmare. And then Floofendorf is a whimsical, happy dream where you're entering into a happy dream. So we knew where the story was going. So we needed to create a set where it all made sense with the characters that were in the first two experiences over there. And we knew we wanted to use the high ceilings and use that height. So we were playing with some ideas like a treehouse and whatnot. And then the treehouse kind of fell through because we needed characters that people were more familiar with. So anyway, we're just marching through all the different story beats and trying to figure out what makes sense. But once we have the story, we come up with challenges and puzzles and scenery and fun things that fit where that's going. Kim, you probably want to talk to that, I would guess, since you're more of the set person.
Yeah, I think that we realized where our strengths were with set design. And when we're coming up with the overall story and set and everything involved in our games, we think, okay, first of all, sky's the limit. Then you come in, you say, can we do that? And sometimes actually that has led to even better designs. Will was the one who solved a major set design issue for us. Instead of doing like a traditional castle where you have to do like very realistic rock and stonework, which is something I've never done, but then again, I do things I've never done all the time. He came up with a fun idea to play with the idea of what a castle could be. And I don't want to tell too much about that because I think that's a fun reveal in the game. But that one little twist, that one little change in the overall picture of the game led us down a path that has become so fun and whimsical that it has helped to determine the interactions that you have with our characters, the types of puzzles that we build. So in escape rooms, there's always a discussion between, do you design puzzle first, do you design story first? And every escape room designer that knows what they should say will always say story first, right? Because that's what you should say. And that is what we do. But that is actually where it's fun, I think, to come up with that story. And we write a 3 to 5 act play, essentially. Mm-hmm. We have a member of our team that's an amazing writer. And we work with her to come up with what is the play that you're creating? And then you come in and you say, within that play, what are the moments you need to hit? What are the really important moments? And then we design our puzzle flow around bottlenecking those moments so that everybody can see and be involved in the important and most memorable moments of the game.
Nice. Yeah. I love that. So do you do the, I've heard that people will do the set design and get that and then work out the puzzles based on what is in the set or props and that type of thing. Do you do that? Or do you come up with the puzzles and then?
I think that is such a living thing that one influences the other and back and forth that it's hard to say distinctly. Probably we're coming up with those simultaneously and they just influence each other.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes you have this great puzzle in mind and you're like, I got to build something around it because I want to include it.
Yes.
My advice for that would be take all those great puzzle ideas that you're having in between games, put them in a notebook or whatever you use to record it. And then when you're building a new game, you can pull it out and see if it fits in that new experience. So you're not forcing a puzzle into something where it doesn't really fit. But there's a puzzle in our newest game that I've been trying to put in a game for probably 6 years. And it finally found its home. And I'm like, yes, I finally get to use this concept that I've been trying to do for so long. That works pretty well for us.
The puzzles and everything should feel like it belongs in that world. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Yeah. Using the set design in the world to help dictate the puzzles is a big part of it.
Yeah. Cool. And when you guys do the set design, do you do most of the work yourself or do you hire out some of it? How do you get it all done?
Originally, it was just Will and I after our full-time jobs in there doing everything. And then we have had the benefit in our last 2 builds to bring on some incredibly talented artists, local artists, to help with some of our larger set pieces and some of the scenic painting. And to be honest with you, they're so much better. It's been mostly my job in the past to do the set building and scenic painting and everything. And bringing them on has elevated what we can do. They're just incredible artists, Stevie and Sean. Stevie's our carpenter and Sean is our scenic painter. And I love being able to be like, here it is, go for it. And that has allowed me, mostly because that was my role a lot before, to dedicate more time to the things that only I can do, right? So that's a little bit more fabricating very specific set pieces and fabricating puzzles that nobody else can fabricate. And then handing them off to Will and saying, make this come to life with the electronics.
So these are employees?
They're not employees. Actually, our painter, Sean Garzoni, is our manager's mom. She is an art teacher. And we reached out to her and said, can you scenic paint? And she said, I'd love to try. Now she's doing scenic painting around the upstate and in several different escape rooms, all because she jumped into it and thought she could do it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then our carpenter, Stevie Griffith, he was just the stars aligning on Indeed. We put up a post for a set builder and he is a professional set builder that has worked in Hollywood and with Disney.
Wow.
Moved here for reasons like to be closer to family.
Mm-hmm.
And he, the very first moment we met him, his energy and his enthusiasm for what we were doing was just like, we have to work with this guy.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then other things of like building and tech and stuff. How did you learn that?
I'm the tech guy. And so from doing haunted houses, I started learning how to use some of these controllers. I've been doing that for 15 years. I have a degree in mechanical engineering, which they don't teach you these things necessarily, but it makes it a little bit easier to learn. You get a little leg up. And so just after now doing, being in the industry over 8 years, we've learned how to do all those effects and what works for us and tried all sorts of different controllers and inputs and outputs and things, lots of different logic and how to write it and how to make it so any of our staff are able to troubleshoot and figure out what's going on. I could talk a lot about that. It's,
what's your favorite controller?
We use the Flex Maxes, the Fright Ideas stuff. I think that it's extremely reliable once you get it set up and it's bulletproof and it just runs and runs, and it has some other features that make it very nice for troubleshooting if something goes wrong mid-game.
And then on the computer end of it, what do you use as far as software?
We are using M3 on our newer games. We're going away from that because the network and computers are just another thing that, yes, they give you a lot of extra tools, but they can also go wrong. And so we've developed some skills that the computer could need an update. We've had computers update and then the system goes down. And it's hard to make a Windows computer not update itself, and just weird stuff like that. And but Kim talked about some of our scenic painter and our set builder, but our staff has really come on a lot for the effects and a lot of the puzzles in these newer games. And they've done a ton of work on some really cool stuff. And that's great because they're our regular employees that run games. So now not only do they know how to run games, they know how to fix things, they know how to build things. And so they get a better variety in their job as well. And a lot of ownership for some of the great stuff that they've built for us.
Yeah, that's cool. So we talked a little bit about your being home haunters and the scary rooms. Do the scary rooms, are they as popular as your other rooms? Do they book out as much or more?
Yes, they're very popular. They're either the top seller or one of the top sellers most months. I don't think that we could open up two more, three more and have it be the same, but we have the right mix right now. We have six options or seven options if you don't want to do scary. So I think that helps a lot.
That makes sense.
I don't do scary at all. And that just baffles me. Why? What draws people to that? What do you think it is?
I think that people want to have that emotion. They want to go do an experience and really feel something. And scary is one of the easiest emotions to understand because everybody's felt it before. And I think that you want scary in a very safe way, right? You want to feel like you're in danger, but then be able to laugh about it. And I think that people like to see their friends scared too. I think that there's that element of, oh my God, that was so funny. Or you were terrified. I don't really know why it's as popular as it is. We were worried in the beginning if it would be popular. I think peer pressure helps.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It's what gets people talking too, right? Like, oh, did you see the scary one? Oh man, I wonder, I can't do that, but let's do one of their other ones or something. Those ads do really well for us, anything about advertising scary. And it's interesting. There's a whole spectrum of what people are okay with scary. You might have a group in there in a totally non-scary experience and a box falls open and they scream and, oh, okay, whoa, that was a lot. and then you have people who have been to haunted houses their whole life and they don't scream at all or act scared at any of our scariest experiences, but they walk out saying, no, it was a great time. We had a lot of fun. And so it's just fun to be able to entertain this wide group of people and be able to offer different options.
At our place in Kissimmee, before Tina sold it, we had a room that had some scares in it. And I remember this one guy, so stoic, nothing affected this guy. And they came out and I was like, wow, man, nothing affected you. He goes, oh no, my heart was going. I don't show it, but man, he got me a couple of times. And I was like, okay, cool. Sometimes they don't show it, but yeah, they enjoy it. And maybe they're not going to tell you they're scared, but sometimes they will.
That's a really important lesson. And we teach all of our new staff this because they're running one of the new scary games and they might do the roll and then get a good scare. And then the next room time get nothing.
Right.
And like, that doesn't mean that that group isn't having fun. They may not scream. They may not even be particularly scared, but you're going to entertain them and they're going to go through, they booked a scary experience. They're going to be entertained. Even if they're not screaming and jumping, mm-hmm. they walk out of there and be like, that was so much fun. They're just, everyone that reacts differently.
And actually with scary games, you should almost have a mixture of 50-50 of like laughter and screams, right? So mm-hmm. as important as it is to scare people, they also need to be able to laugh. And the importance of laughter in a scary game is to help drop down your barriers a little bit mm-hmm. so that then when you scare the people, then they're more vulnerable. Yeah. If you can't make them cry, you should at least make them laugh.
Do you, like, when you design the scary room, do you try to work in a little bit of humor? And how do you do a scary room?
Good question.
And are people doing it wrong?
I think that most scary escape rooms that are billed as scary are not actually scary. I think they're spooky. And I think mm-hmm. there's an important distinction between horror and spooky. And so if you want to be spooky, then you can just build in some little pop, like air scares. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the little pneumatic scares or sounds or lighting or set design, and you can be spooky.
And but a creepy really doll.
There you go. Exactly. And that will be scary for some people, but to bill yourself as a horror game, I think has a whole different level of involvement. And then you have to get into the psychology of what really scares people. And like we were just talking about, how do you get them to let down their barriers a little bit or their guard a little bit so that then you can get in and scare them? And this is really what Will knows better than I do. This was his strength, but so he can talk to that even more.
A great way to get people to let down their guard is have them focus on a puzzle. That we have puzzles in Starlight where we don't separate you from your group or anything like that. We're not one of those. But there's some puzzles where you have to stand in different areas of the space or else you can't solve it. And so that creeps people out even if we do nothing. If they're just like, oh, I have to stand over there, you have to stand over there. So just playing with that tension. And we build the tension in parts. We give them a little scare. There's times where you think a scare is going to happen and it doesn't happen. Like mm-hmm. it's like the scene in the horror movie where the music's building and then it's a cat that jumps out and you're like, oh, and right. then they laugh because, oh, that was silly. We try to build in those sort of moments.
But then that's the moment when they let their guard down and laugh because it was just a cat. Then you hit them with the scare. You need to put as much work into your scares as you do every other element of the game. There's so much psychology behind how you scare people. That you can't just rely on a loud noise or the lights going out or something like that. You have to put your work equally into setting up a scare to get it to work.
So there's the cheap tricks and then there's the doing it right kind of thing.
Yeah.
It sounds like I will say with Starlight Motel, I especially enjoyed it because I used to work as a front desk clerk. And when I went in there, I was like, oh, this feels like I'm at this seedy motel. And then when you've got a desk clerk there, this is so fun. I really enjoyed that.
That's right. So since I'm a giant wuss, if I come there, can I request like a toned down version? Or do you have people like that say in the middle of the game, like, I'm done, get me out of here? Like,
Yes. I'll speak to the toned down version thing because I think we do this a little bit differently than some other places. And I feel pretty adamantly about this. I'm not confident that I can sell you tickets to our scary experience that was built on horror and built on acting mm-hmm. and sell you a ticket and have you have the correct flavor of what you personally find scary. And it's the right level where you're not too scared, but you're scared enough that you got your money's worth or whatever. We don't offer, you know, all these different flavors of it because I feel like that would be disingenuous to what we are trying to do. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's certain things we can't turn off. We can't turn off the spooky music. We can't turn off some of the sounds and effects and things. We have control over what the actor does. But for us to try to read you and be like, they look scared. I don't know. We just talked about how different people show fear all different ways. We don't feel confident. If I'm selling you a ticket, it's a contract, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. You said you want a less scary version. This is a less scary version. If you're scared, then we've let you down. So we don't offer a less scary version of our scary escape rooms. We offer 6 other escape rooms that you can do that are not scary.
Every person's Goldilocks effect is different.
Exactly. Yeah. Tell you what we do is those actors are trained and they are humans. And if someone is having a really tough time, we don't get any joy in making you cry or jumping on you even more.
Maybe a little.
Yeah, thank you a little. But like, it's safety and entertaining, and right. we prioritize customer service over getting that scare.
We also, we do have people leave frequently, especially the Starlight Motel. There's maybe not every weekend, but a few times a month, somebody will leave. Partly that's because people bring their children younger than we recommend.
What?
And then the children go sit in the lobby. But we have really good communication with our employees where if a team member leaves, if a customer leaves the experience, we have someone go catch them. So they'll go to the hallway or go to the lobby and chat with them and say, hey, are you okay? And we check in with them. And then they can just sit in the lobby and wait if they like to, or they can return to the experience if they want to. But normally the people who are most scared, either something kind of triggers them or they're getting themselves worked up about it more than they were going to be scared regardless.
Yep. Yep. I know you guys do some merch.
I've
never seen this, like the little motel keychain. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, we have to get one. Is merch worth doing?
I always push the merch. And then we've got shelves of unsold merch.
Oh, do you?
It's more for fun. I would, as an escape, if anyone has an escape room, I don't think you're going to make a ton of money on merch. It's more for fun. It's more to get people talking and all that. And everybody wants different things. So those, the keychains sell really well because they fit kind of a niche. If I can put this in my pocket or put it on my shelf and do whatever. We've tried other things that haven't sold as well.
Do you have stickers? I want stickers.
Stickers, yeah.
We used to sell stickers and now we have them as a birthday gift to people who come on their birthday. We'll give them a sticker. I'm not really sure why we went away from the stickers, but we have a bunch of them. We just don't really sell them. I don't know why. I like stickers a lot.
Yeah. It's tough. The sale price for a sticker, it's a weird intermediate where they're almost too expensive to give away all the time, unless it's special occasions, birthdays. Like, we couldn't give them to every customer. But then it's also, what do you sell it for, a dollar or two? I don't know. We haven't really found a mix that works for us. But
yeah.
We tried selling the stickers for a dollar and they never sold. It just, like, people wouldn't get out their wallet for a sticker is what we found. But maybe they just weren't cool enough. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to talk about your actors. So some of your rooms have actors, and is it hard to find, because we're struggling with this right now. Are we going to do actors in the room? Is it hard to find people that can do it effectively and keep them around, or can you teach anyone to do it?
The answers are no and yes. Wait, yes and no. Maybe yes and yes. It is harder to, you have to look for a certain type of person.
Yeah.
But if you find that person and treat them well, I think the fact that they act keeps them here longer because their job is more exciting. It's more rewarding. You get more interaction than just sitting behind the computer screen and giving hints if needed. We have a lot of thoughts on actors. I don't know. Kim, did you want to answer that question any differently?
Technically, we don't hire actors. We hire people who are enthusiastic and open-minded to the acting component. But we've maybe only ever hired two people that were like, that would call themselves actors. Like, this is something they want to do as a career. And I think because of the way that we design, Will and I are not actors. We don't have acting backgrounds. So we don't write parts that we couldn't do. And I think that helps to make those parts more approachable to our employees. We also try to build a scaffolding for them. This is the framework. This is what the character is. This is their motivation. But then because they're not really trained actors, they use elements of themselves into it. And they can sort of mold that character to suit their own personality a little bit more instead of saying, Lou can only be played this way. Some of our Lous have a New York accent, but some of our employees aren't comfortable doing a New York accent.
Right.
We never told them to do a New York accent. I don't know why he's from New York. I don't know. But so we try to give them the freedom to work within that framework and mold the character to what works for them. And then they can play with that a little bit. And I think their ability to have different interactions and meaningful interactions with our employees has a greater job satisfaction for them.
Have you had anyone that just goes over the top and you have to rein them in a bit?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. When you give them a long leash, you have to assume that some of them are going to pull at the ends of that leash as much as possible.
Right.
And I would rather rein people in a little bit than have to shove them forward.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot of people are afraid of actors in escape rooms, don't feel comfortable for the particular reason where if there is a human standing over your shoulder watching you do a puzzle, that is not a fun experience.
Right.
You feel dumb. You feel like, am I going too fast? Am I going too slow? What am I doing wrong? And so our actors, the way the games are all designed, that actor pops in, pops out, they pop in to give assistance or move the story forward, and then they're out of there and you get to do your puzzle thing and then you interact with them, right? Another thing, back to the question of, can we make the game less scary? There's certain parts of the game that you have to interact with the actors, and there's puzzles that involve the actors where you have to ask them for something or talk to them or fool them in some form or fashion. So yeah, we have to train them well so they know the goals, they know what fun gameplay is, but then we want them to put their personality into the roles. You shouldn't play it the exact same way I do, right? I'm a 6'5" kind of larger guy. If we have a smaller female, she shouldn't try to be Lou the same way I do. It's going to feel disingenuous, right? They're going to be a different type of Lou. So
we played one game. It was a speakeasy type of game. And there was a card dealer. And Tina and I could not figure out what we're supposed to, because he kept going, who wants to play a game here? And we're trying to figure out puzzles. And he's, step right up. We go over there, we look at the cards, and we're like, we have no idea what we're supposed to do. And you could tell he was getting frustrated. He's like, all right, you want to play? All right, here's a couple of cards. Okay, do I bet? What do I do? And it was Tina would not go near him. It was like, you need to deal with that. I have no idea. She gets uncomfortable with that. Yeah. And so finally we got it. He had to nudge us in the right direction. We left and we're like, that could have been done better. You know? It is what it is.
Seen things like that, right? You have to be able to read those type of situations and design the game so your customers don't feel stupid and more like they're doing something wrong. Starlight Motel has the greatest, I don't want to say the greatest, a good entry question to teach you to play along. You come up to the hotel manager and they ask you a very simple question like, oh, what are you here for, a room? What are you here for? And then it's a pretty simple entry question. Oh, we're here to get a room, right? That's a common response. Some people are like, the guy told us to come in here. the escape room guy told us to walk in here. Are we in the wrong spot? Right. And we're like, oh, you want a room?
I was going for an escape room. How did he lead me into this hotel?
And if a group is like that, you'd be like, okay, we're going to have to be a little more straightforward with this group.
I like that your rooms, you're right, it's not an actor that is there the whole time. They pop in, pop out at the right times. It's not a horror game where somebody is always around and you need the puzzles to be easier, much easier, because you're just like always on edge. Okay, the actor's gone. It's puzzle time. And they're good puzzles, right? They're quality puzzles. And it has such a good mix. Your games have such a good mix with the two that they blend really well, that it is, people who are really into puzzles will enjoy it. And people who are really into immersion will enjoy it. So well done on those.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I see on your website, you guys have these, what are they called, premium experiences. And then you have the classic experiences. Is the premium, those are the ones with actors, right? Mainly?
All of our games have an acting component. But the classic games are older games that the set design, production value, and special effects and acting are a little bit smaller scale. And then the premium games are just like bump that up a bunch. Mm-hmm. And those are the games that we've developed in the last few years. The classic games are a little bit more approachable to people who are just getting into escape rooms. And the premium games are great even for those people, but it's taking everything from our classic games and just, 300% that.
Ramping them up, yeah.
Yep.
And they're premium, they're better games, so they do cost a little bit more too. Do you feel like that cost hinders some people to coming, or is it, I feel as an escape room and person loves escape rooms, I'm like, give me the premium. I want the best of them, except not your scary ones, but give me the best of the best. I want to do that. Or do you feel like it hurts maybe some people from doing it?
I love having the two options, because if someone doesn't want to spend the money on the premium, we have a cheaper option for them that they're willing to do. Enthusiasts usually go for premium, but so do a lot of non-enthusiasts that are like, hey, I've never done this escape room before. Might as well spend the extra money and really go for it. And that's not an uncommon thing to see people do. And so I think it works out both ways. Our classic games are still fun. You're going to get a fun interaction. It's just going to be a more, oh, hi, I'm playing a character. I put you in the room and then you don't see that character again until the end. So it's just a much more abbreviated version. But those, I can tell you, those premium experiences are, they cost a lot more to build and a lot more to run. And so the extra prices is necessary.
Yeah. But they sell out faster than our classic games. It's maybe not a huge difference, but they actually book as well or better than our classic games.
Yeah.
Are the classic games all older, or do you have some new ones that you've added and you just call them classic, or?
They're all our original games that we built maybe like over 5 years ago. I mean, they're not what they were when we built them 5 to 8 years ago, because in between every single new game development, we spend all of that time between developing new games, going back and updating our older games. So Dr. Fratelli's Cabin still has the same heart and soul that it had when we opened it, but we've continually tried to apply the skill set that we have now to those games that we had that we built years ago.
I take it every experience from now on that you guys build is going to be a premium experience. Like, you won't go, oh, we've got this smaller space, we're going to build a new classic.
The premium games are the ones that just nearly kill us to build. So I think we would be open-minded to another classic game.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to say no. The classic game just emphasizes different things.
Have you all retired any games, or you kept all the ones you've always had?
Our business plan has been more based on expansion versus turnover. We've only turned over one game, and that was partly because it was the year 2020 and we needed something to do. And actually that game, we didn't like it any better than the game we replaced. But it was an important thing for us to do in 2020 to keep ourselves occupied. But we are at our maximum capacity now. So if we do build another game, it will have to be a turnover. It will have to be a replacement of a game.
And the older games are still getting booked?
Yeah, Dr. Fratelli's Cabin, our very first game we designed, is still one of our best sellers.
Wow, that's awesome.
I personally, I came up with a name, so I'm going to be partial, but I like the term classic for a Dr. Fratelli's Cabin sort of thing, because they do feel quality, but a little bit more classic style. It's a little more mysterious, and you're solving puzzles because a doctor puts you in there, and we give you a fun storyline and fun acting. But I like it. I think it's fun to have some of those throwback type of rooms, as long as the gameplay is still fun and people still enjoy it.
I wish places would put where they're going to retire to, because we just moved to Indiana, and there's been a couple places we've gone to, and I'm like, oh, that's cool, I'll do that one next time I'm here. And then we come back, and the game's gone. I'm like, dang it, I missed it. So I love that you have them all. I think that's cool that you've kept them all around. That's awesome.
Yeah. So when it comes to staff pay, is there somebody who knows how to run all the rooms? They get a little bit more, or somebody who does the premium acting?
Everybody knows how to run all the rooms once they're fully trained. And I think that is part, and everybody works at both locations. I think that's part of keeping the job fresh and exciting, that you might work one location, you have five rooms, six rooms over there, and then this other location, you have three rooms. So it keeps you on your toes, keeps you excited about coming in and enjoying the day. And pay is dependent on experience. Obviously we have managers, we have some people that are not managers, but they're more senior experts or technical experts, or do a lot of our artwork, video work, things like that. And retention has been good. We have people that have been with us 5 years. We haven't hired in almost a year. I don't think we brought anyone on in almost a year. So keeping people around for a good amount of time.
Okay.
But yeah, pay, I haven't done extensive research on what other escape rooms in the area are paying, but I'm going to guess that we start higher and we pay higher in general. I understand it is a tougher job than greeting someone and sitting behind a computer screen sort of vibe.
We also had to pivot a couple years ago, or maybe last year, and we had to develop a full-time position, because what we had anticipated, which was that our employment would be more based for more appropriate for college students, part-time, they're just making a little extra money. That was actually not the case. We have most of our staff relies on escape artists as their primary source of income. So we had to pivot and say, okay, if we want to keep these people, we need to change and we need to offer more to them. So in the full-time position, they have some benefits, some 401k options, and minimum hours that they get paid, a pay raise, but it also PTO. Comes with this PT, paid time off. Yeah. Wow. But it comes with some expectation of their reliability. You are expected to work this much per week, and outside of your PTO, it's not just like unlimited time off, like it's more subjective. And I think that's helped a lot because we're saying like, okay, we get it. We need to change and adapt to for what you need from us. And that way we can keep you longer.
Your location is, or I guess both locations, it's not seasonal, right? Really, it's year round, but the same.
We have two slow months, September and May. And obviously December's crazy. Last 2 weeks of the year are fully sold out and booked. But no, it's pretty consistent. I'm really proud to be able to give a work environment that people want to come to every day and want to stick with us for years. That's something that makes me feel really good.
I also think that a super important part that I would never want to skip over is that Will still runs escape rooms. He still comes in and sits shoulder to shoulder with our employees and runs those games and runs even our original games that we designed and built. So he still gets to see where the sticking points are in the game and in the team dynamic. And like to be on that ground level still, I think one, they get to see, hey, this guy really cares about this and still wants to be involved. And also it allows him to not just come up with theoretically, this is what we need to do, but actually this is what we need to do.
Yeah. He was in Help Wanted.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That is so good. All owners need to be in their rooms and even just go and try the bathroom, go and sit in the lobby, see what it's like as the experience. And I love that.
All right. Sure. So we've come to our speed round. And the way this is going to work is you're going to answer our questions in one, try to keep it to one sentence, but we will allow two sentences. All right.
All right. I think we're going to alternate two back and forth. Kim, we're going to let you start on this first one. All right. Ladies first here. So what would you say is the best thing about owning an escape room business?
We get to build a world that people come to and they just have fun.
Nice.
And Will?
Working with my wife every day, dream come true.
Oh, Lord.
Look.
That's the kind of answer I'd give if Tina was on this call.
We're allowed to lie? We're allowed to lie in these answers? Right?
I feel like you, Kim, you might have the same answer, but to this next question, what is the worst thing about owning
an escape room? Perfect setup. That's perfect. Will, you want to go first on that one?
Sure. I care about it so much. Sometimes turning it off can be difficult.
Mm-hmm. I think not having somebody else that can solve the problems for us is the hardest part. It's all on our shoulders.
Yeah, that's good. What is one of your favorite escape rooms that you've played?
My favorite escape room is in Baton Rouge at 13th Gate. It's called The Asylum. It has one of the best single person separated from the group moments. And I got to be in that moment and I have nightmares about that moment in a good way.
I'm going to choose Storykeeper by Lucurio because it was so influential on our business and we played it early on, gave us some really good ideas.
All right.
What would you say is the best skill to have as an escape room business owner?
Will, you're first.
Oh, awareness of what you're good at and what you need help on.
And I would say being humble and flexible because you always have to change even the things you love.
Kim, we'll start with you this time. What is one thing you wish you would have known before starting your business?
I think I wish I would have known that I would care about it so much that it would keep me up at night. I never thought I would love it as much as I do. I knew I'd like it, but I didn't know I'd love it this much.
It's awesome.
Awesome. And Will?
Everything is going to be okay. That's what I want.
I love it. We'll get a little picture of your face. Everything's going to be okay. Yeah. Just hang that on the wall.
You can tell Kim's the one that's worrying about it. And Will's like, hey, it's going to be okay. Relax.
No, it's the opposite. He needs to remember everything's going to be okay.
I wish future Will would tell past Will that everything's going to be okay. Yeah.
That's fair enough.
All right, we'll start with you this time. What is one piece of reference material or information source that you'd recommend for someone just starting out in the business that wants to open their own escape room business?
Go make friends with your favorite escape room owner.
That's good.
That's my best piece. All right. Ask some questions.
I like that.
Yeah, and I would say go to the conventions, connect with people, take the classes. That was early on in our design a huge influence. It really helped us out a lot. You're not alone.
Good.
Okay.
What is one piece of advice you would give to new escape room business owners? And Kim, you're starting this one.
I think to design within your skill set, if you have never done a set before, don't try to build a cave. Do what you can do and then do that really well.
Okay.
Yeah. Patience. Don't expect to be at year 10 during year one. One bite at a time.
Oh, come on.
Sorry, Kurt. I know that is, it's a tough thing. It is.
Yeah.
You're like, why am I not there? I'm not there yet. And you're like, it takes time.
I understand. So thank you. Great job on the speed round. That was awesome. You guys are pros, obviously. Thank you for taking the time to do this. What is the best way for people to follow what you're doing, reach out to you? Any socials? What do you want to put out there?
I love emails. Just email us info@escapeartistgreenville.com. You can follow our business, Escape Artist Greenville, on Facebook and Instagram and all that. But I like emails.
Yeah, fair enough. So you're packed. You have no more space to build anything. So you don't have any projects coming up, right?
Are you kidding me? There's always something.
Anything that you can tell us?
If in the middle of the project, I'm always like, I'm never building another room again. And then a month later, we're like, I'd like to say 2024, we have been planning for a while. Kim's student loans are forgiven. She is going to part-time at physical therapy and she has more time to spend on the business. So this year is about playing a lot of escape rooms, doing a lot of travel, coming up with what we want to do in the future. We're doing LARPs. We're doing all sorts of fun stuff this year. So I'm really excited about this year.
Are you cycling to those places or are you going to drive?
Awesome. The hard part about owning an escape room is that you often say no to things that you wish you could say yes to. So 2024 this is so cliche to say out loud, but it's our year of yes. We're going to go do the things that we've been saying no to for a long time. So 2025, maybe back to the year of no, but.
Fair enough. And you've got a strong enough staff to be able to take care of things.
Yeah,
That's awesome. All right. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you all for listening. This has been Kurt and Chris. Thanks for joining us on another scrumptious episode of Mystery Soup. Until our next culinary concoction, may your clues be clear and your escapes be triumphant. Keep puzzling, my friends.
See ya.
Mystery Soup. Mystery Soup.